times the legal limit. Prior to this announcement, the company compounded its problems by providing a series of false justifications to the EPA in attempts to explain why environmental road tests did not match lab results for the diesel vehicles they sold from 2008 through 2015. Volkswagen's CEO resigned 5 days after the EPA announcement, claiming he had no knowledge of his team's decision to intentionally evade environmental standards. When lawsuits related to the scandal were finally settled, the number of affected cars had climbed to 580,000. Volkswagen paid $20 billion for its crimes. In addition to environmental damage, Volkswagen customers suffered direct harm. Nobody wanted their used cars. In the resulting settlement, the court ruled that customers were eligible to receive thousands of dollars back on their previous car purchases to make up for lost resale value. But to many of these customers, who bought their fuel-efficient Volkswagens because of their personal commitment to the environment, no rebate could compensate for Volkswagen's breach of trust. 5 years before, on the morning of April 20th, 2010, an explosion rocked the Deepwater Horizon, a mobile offshore drilling unit that was drilling a deepwater well for BP in the Gulf of Mexico. 11 of the 126 members of the crew on board were killed in the fireball. The fire could not be extinguished before the Deepwater Horizon sank to the ocean floor, 5,000 feet below, 36 hours later. The explosion and resulting spill created the worst environmental disaster in American history. The U.S. government summarized the recovery effort, reporting, "Oil flowed from the well for 87 days. Two drilling ships, numerous containment vessels, and a flotilla of support vessels were deployed to control the source of the well, while 835 skimmers and approximately 9,000 vessels were involved in the cleanup. On the single most demanding day of the response, over 6,000 vessels, 82 helicopters, and 20 fixed-wing aircraft, and over 47,849 personnel responders were assigned. 88,522 square miles of fisheries were closed. 168 visibly oiled wildlife were collected. 3,795,985 feet of containment boom was deployed. 26 controlled in situ burns were conducted, burning 59,550 barrels of oil. 181 miles of shoreline were heavily oiled. 68,530 gallons, 1,632 barrels of disbursement were applied, and 27,097 barrels of oil were recovered. An estimated 4.9 million barrels of oil spilled into the ocean during the disaster. U.S. District Judge Carl Barbier found that BP's negligent acts that caused the blowout, explosion, and oil spill were profit-driven decisions. He concluded, "These instances of negligence, taken together, evidence an extreme deviation from the standard of care and a conscious disregard of known risks." BP and three BP employees were also charged criminally. The company pleaded guilty to 11 felony counts of misconduct or negligence for the deaths resulting from the initial explosion. After facing more than 100,000 lawsuits from businesses and individuals affected by the spill, BP estimated in July 2016 that the disaster cost the company $62 billion. These aren't just any companies. Volkswagen is the largest automaker in the world. BP is the sixth largest oil and gas producer in the world. Just 2 years earlier, banks around the world were accused of risky lending practices that nearly crashed the global economy. The willingness of these companies to put profits above the well-being of their customers, their neighbors, and the environment has not just damaged their individual reputations, it has damaged the perception of businesses in general. The Edelman Trust Barometer found that just 52% of people living in democracies worldwide trust corporations, and that trust is eroding. What's more, they believe the problem begins at the top. Just 37% of those surveyed find CEOs to be credible. Years of abuse have left people disenchanted with corporations and skeptical of their claims. On a far broader scale, the bragging and promising that have defined modern advertising have eroded trust further. Most everyone knows that products on offer probably won't give them fewer wrinkles, whiter teeth, a slimmer waistline, or a happier marriage, as promised again and again. Sick of being fooled, people assume that the phrase for profit means at any cost, even the possibility of harm to the consumer. Overcoming skepticism is like overcoming gravity. It's a natural force buttressed by the endless bragging and overpromising of brands. Story and the psychology of influence. The well-told story erases skepticism by wrapping the story's meaning inside an emotion. The source of this psychological power is empathic identification. Once an audience instinctively links its sense of self with a protagonist, doubt vanishes. The protagonist's choices and actions become the audience's vicarious choices and actions. Each change in value charge in the protagonist's life sends the audience through the same emotional twists and turns. When the core character's final action wins her objective desire, emotion and meaning fuse without a word of explanation. Like an epiphany, a story's climactic action floods the mind with a sense of truth. Because the audience member's own thoughts spontaneously form this idea, she believes in it without rationalization or any hint of skepticism. It's hers, after all. What's more, the pleasure-filled emotion aroused by this sudden insight engraves the experience into her memory. From that day on, her upbeat remembrance surrounds the brand with a subliminal halo that influences her purchases. This is how stories, consistently told well, establish a meaningful brand in the minds of consumers. The search for subject matter. Once you determine your audience, stage one of the storytelling process, you must choose subject matter that contains a physical and social setting, a core value, and a protagonist, stage two. Subject matter possibilities for brands fall into at least five grand genres: origin, history, mission, product, and customer stories. You need at least one story to define your brand, but some brands tell thousands. Origin stories. In the comics, origin stories explain how a superhero achieved his uncanny powers and driving desire for justice. A radioactive spider bite infused Peter Parker with amazing arachnidian skills, but it wasn't until a thief murdered his uncle, a murder he could have prevented if he'd used his superpowers, that Peter took on his secret crime-fighting persona, known as Spider-Man. This origin story not only dramatizes how Spider-Man became Spider-Man, but also uses the humanizing combination of guilt, courage, and humility to build a lasting empathy for this bizarre character. For companies known for innovation, successful branding often begins with a founder as protagonist origin story. Apple's, for instance, began in 1976 when Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak were bit by the urge to create a home computer in their garage. Corporate wisdom at the time claimed that the only buyers for these machines were businesses with complex needs. But that view was obviously wrong, and today's Silicon Valley tells an anthology of origin stories based on the landmark garages where businesses like Apple, Google, and HP were born. Once again, empathy. Genius in a Garage stories are as old as Thomas Edison. They touch the heart because they star the iconic American business hero, a young shoestring entrepreneur battling short-sighted prejudice and overwhelming odds. If your company has a powerful origin story, and the core value of that story aligns with your brand's, make it the first story you tell to establish your brands in the minds of your consumers. Corporate history. In truth, however, successful businesses rarely begin with action movie heroism. They take root in three things: a good idea, hard work, and persistence. Denied a compelling origin, corporations often try to build brand affinity around a chronology of events that would only interest the C-suites and the board. Too often, these tellings become bland narratives listing positive events in the corporation's history. As we pointed out in Chapter 4, stories progress with emotional dynamics. Narratives repeat emotionless facts. Consider, for example, the Coca-Cola website piece titled 125 Years of Sharing Happiness. This is the remarkable story about the evolution of an iconic brand and the company that bears its name. Since its birth at a soda fountain in downtown Atlanta, Georgia in 1886, Coca-Cola has been a catalyst for social interaction and inspired innovation. These unique moments in history, arranged in chronological sequence, have helped create a global brand that provides billions of moments of refreshment every day. It makes a grand promise that it does not keep. Would this chronology hook the attention of Coke's typical customer, hold her interest, pay it off, make her feel anything? Coke marketers ask that emotion-killing question. What do we want our customers to know about Coke? During the 2017 Super Bowl, Coke reran It's Beautiful, an ad taken from the 2014 Super Bowl, reaffirming its corporate commitment to cultural diversity. A positive position, but still not in story form. Throughout its marketing history, Coke has been content with soft narratives. Their homepage, in January 2016, featured articles including a food historian's take, anti-stories, recipes, instructions, where-to-find-it maps, and a bottle shaped like the Venus de Milo. Coke owes its first 100 years of global dominance to 20th century advertising. The graphic can be seen in the PDF. For this iconic brand to maintain or even increase its 40% market share, it will have to do what 21st century beverages like Red Bull have already done. Go story. Mission stories. If your founding story lacks against the odds excitement, if your corporate history marches through time with professional but boring progress, your company can still find empathy-enhancing stories by taking on a mission. Mission, in our definition, means a service to humanity that goes beyond writing a check to a well-known charity. Millennial and Generation Z consumers want, indeed demand, public service from private enterprise. They believe profit comes with a social responsibility to make the world a better place. Naive or not, it's what the under 40 market expects. In response, many corporations, big and small, have taken up missions. The most famous mission, an inspiration for many that followed, is Starbucks's Corporate Social Responsibility Initiative, CSR. Three like-minded examples. 1. Procter & Gamble. Ever since Hurricane Katrina in September 2005, when a disaster, natural or human-made, strikes anywhere in the United States, Tide's Loads of Hope program ships truckloads of washers and dryers to families in the midst of chaos. Tide's executives know that clean clothing helps to put desperate people back on their feet. 2. Royal DSM. This Dutch multinational specializes in nutritional and biomedical products, so it naturally partners with the Whole Food program. But DSM also supports small teams of scientists working to solve global environmental and health problems. Watch DSM's mission-focused Storified video, Unsung Heroes of Science. 3. Costa Del Mar. This French-owned, Florida-based manufacturer produces high-quality polarizing sunglasses using biodegradable materials. CDM's Kick Plastic campaign strives to reduce the Texas-sized plastic garbage patches swirling in the world's oceans. These missions generate story after story that star either the corporation as the protagonist or a surrogate who labors in its stead. Both roles are immediately empathetic because, given the way of things, anybody who tries to do good in this world is automatically an underdog. Marketers at mission-driven companies should strongly consider telling stories that align with their respective missions on their websites and in their advertising. Product stories. Apple followed its origin story with a brilliant product story, a massive metaphor first told for the 1984 Super Bowl. In Apple's iconic commercial, an athletic young woman symbolizes the Macintosh computer, and her revolt, in turn, symbolizes the Mac revolution. Clad in bright red shorts, stormtroopers at her heels, she runs through an otherwise gray world and down the center aisle of a cinema. On screen, a propaganda film celebrates the anniversary of the Information Purification Directives, the words echoing over a submissive audience, hypnotized by the promise that the oppressive, dominant technology will prevail. The ad cleverly linked the ubiquitous IBM business computers to the Orwellian society from the novel 1984, in which all decisions were controlled from on high. In the climax of the ad, the woman hurls a Mjolnir-inspired hammer toward a giant screen. The propaganda images shatter, liberating the audience by destroying the symbol of the state. She risks all to achieve the object of her desire. And as we celebrate her success, the narrator explains, "On January 24th, Apple Computer will introduce Macintosh, and you'll see why 1984 won't be like 1984. It was a powerful statement, one that resonated deeply in an America in the midst of the Cold War, facing the Soviet Union's totalitarian regime. The same core value of rebellion versus submission resonates in Apple's trademark. It's not an apple, Patrick Davis pointed out. It's an apple with a bite taken out of it. That image retells the foundational story of Judeo-Christian heritage. The first bite from the Tree of Knowledge celebrates humankind's greatest act of rebellion. Apple's branding stories, with their product as protagonist and mythical trademark, dramatize the company's core values of liberty over compliance, creative thinking over rote thought. Consumer stories. If none of the four story sources above work for your enterprise, where do you turn? To the ultimate source, the consumer. The success case most frequently cited is Red Bull's. This company doesn't have an origin, history, mission, or product worth talking about. And yet it found an ingenious way to build its brand. Red Bull's market researchers first discovered that their diehard customer is a young guy who loves extreme sports. Digging deeper, the executives asked, "What do our customers want to feel?" The answer came back, frenetic energy. This insight led to their discovery of the brand's core value, excitement, boredom. The next logical step was to tell online consumer-centric stories that couple powerful writing with original pulse-pounding film to dynamically dramatize the company's core value from the consumer's point of view. One such tale, for example, follows a mountain biker, Claudio Caliwari, as he wheels across the sharp edge of a mountain peak in Virgin, Utah. The path he follows appears to be just a foot wide in spots. The mountain suddenly drops away thousands of feet on either side. You, in empathy, react to his risk. Your heart beats faster. A treacherous spot looms ahead, and Claudio faces a critical decision. Hop over a gap in the track and shave critical seconds off his time, or take a safer, slower route. With a leap, Claudio risks his life, and a rush of white-knuckled excitement runs through us, followed by relief as he lands on solid ground. In that open-mind moment, the Red Bull brand appears on the screen, connecting its image with the charge you just felt. That's branding through story. This is why when you visit Red Bull's website, you won't find a picture of a Red Bull can or any bragging about its contents. Why? Because Red Bull recognizes that its typical 15 to 25-year-old male customer doesn't care about what's in an energy drink. In fact, he doesn't even think about energy drinks, except the moment he walks into a convenience store and opens the fridge. The marketers know that if a guy who's watched RedBull.tv sees a choice between Red Bull and a competitor, he will recall the edge of his seat emotion their storytelling pocketed in his mind and reach for their brand, without fail. Red Bull, as in the earlier examples, tells male-centered stories at the level of physical conflict. Procter & Gamble, in sharp contrast, gears its female-focused stories at the level of inner and social conflict. Consider, for example, the P&G product Always and its hashtag Like a Girl branding campaign. Once again, research. The Always team at the Leo Burnett Agency discovered that the sneering insults, "You run like a girl," and "You throw like a girl," demean not only women in general, but the Always target audience in particular, pubescent girls. "Like a girl" undermines self-esteem at a critical time when profound hormonal change in a girl's body go to war with her sense of self, body and soul, struggling to forge a new identity. The only cure to inner pain is perceptual change. And in this case, it began at the cultural level. Always created a video that does not mention feminine hygiene, Always products, or the ways they might be better than the competition. Instead, it takes all girls everywhere as a massive, empathetic group protagonist. And in one powerful turning point, tells the story of their struggle to overcome this taunt. At climax, empowered girls reverse the phrase's connotation from negative to positive, until hashtag like a girl becomes a symbol of female strength. The internet audience shared their pride and linked that feeling to the Always logo. As of this recording, the hashtag Like a Girl video had been viewed on YouTube more than 100 million times in 150 countries. After its initial online success, Always turned the hashtag Like a Girl campaign into a 2015 Super Bowl ad. Adobe reported that hashtag Like a Girl drove more engagement than any other ad that year. 400,000 people shared the ad with tens of millions of followers on social media during the game. 84% of those mentions were extremely positive. Hashtag Like a Girl became an internet meme, with successful women adopting the hashtag, used by Always to encourage the next generation. Always may have launched the campaign, but it was the public that took it to the next level, turning Always into a more meaningful brand. The meaningful brand. Havas Media defines meaningful brands as those that inspire the thought, this brand improves my life. The sense of enhancement envelops both the consumer and the brand in an aura of well-being. In America, we often mistakenly equate happiness with financial success. While the two are correlated, a person's sense of well-being versus ill-being depends on the moral emotions moved by the values of right-wrong, fair-unfair, loyalty-betrayal, and justice-injustice at play in his life. A poor person, for example, can live in a state of well-being if he looks back at his days and feels that the world has treated him justly, and his poverty, therefore, is due to his own choices, his own actions. A wealthy person, on the other hand, may suffer in misery if he feels that, despite his best choices and actions, an unjust world has cheated him. The former finds life meaningful, the latter questions it. The World Happiness Report reveals this to be the rule, not the exception. The report analyzes global data to identify whether and to what extent macro aspects of life, such as economic growth, employment, political stability, and democratic form of government, or micro aspects, such as individual income, personal freedoms, marital relationships, and social support networks, affect happiness. The World Happiness Report 2017 offers this perspective on America today. The central paradox of the modern American economy, as identified by Richard Easterlin, 2016, is this. Income per person has increased roughly three times since 1960, but measured happiness has not risen. The situation has gotten worse in recent years. Per capita GDP is still rising, but happiness is now actually falling. The predominant discourse in the United States is aimed at raising economic growth, with the goal of restoring the American dream and the happiness that is supposed to accompany it. But the data shows conclusively that this is the wrong approach. The United States can and should raise happiness by addressing America's multifaceted social crises: rising inequality, corruption, isolation, and distrust, rather than focusing exclusively or even mainly on economic growth, especially since the concrete proposals along these lines would exacerbate rather than ameliorate the deepening social crisis. Put simply, we want more from life than money. People want genuine human connection, to be treated fairly, and to be treated honestly. Given this context, to create a meaningful brand in the minds of consumers, it must be authentic. Consumers find a brand trustworthy and meaningful when two stories match: the story the brand tells about itself and the story the public tells about the brand. Therefore, regardless of the story you choose to tell, all brand stories must follow one simple principle. The core value of the story must match the core value of the brand. If these stories do not align, if promises made are not kept, the public feels betrayed and their sense of injustice indicts the brand as detrimental to their lives. In the past, this double-edged phenomenon was known as word of mouth. Advertisers bragged and lured consumers with guarantees. Consumers tried their product service, stories followed, told to friends and family that either confirmed or denied the brand's boasts. Today, thanks to the internet, word of mouth is instantaneous and ubiquitous. Consumers constantly judge and grade every product service of every brand on a scale of 1 to 5, followed by a story told to the world, dramatizing, for better or worse, the consumer's experience. Meaningful brands use the various modes of storytelling listed in this chapter to explicitly and or implicitly dramatize their promises. When a product service's story matches or even exceeds the consumer's hopes, word of net propels a "this brand improves my life" message viral and imbues the brand with a humanized meaning. Havas reports that meaningfulness drives disproportionate financial results. Their global study of 1,000 companies employing 300,000 people in 34 countries across 12 industries found that fully meaningful brands see their marketing KPIs perform 100% better overall compared with less meaningful brands. In fact, every 10% improvement in meaningfulness increases purchase intent by 6.6%, repurchase intent by 3.2%, customer advocacy by 4.8%, and premium pricing by 10.4%. Meaningful brands gain on average 46% more share of wallet than those ranked as non-meaningful. What's more, meaningful brands outperformed the overall stock market by 133%. The facts are clear. Marketers whose brand stories match consumers' stories see their tales retold, as consumer identification drives significantly better returns for team members and shareholders. Chapter 9, Storified Advertising. Man, I'm so glad I saw that advertisement. Nobody, ever. GE had a problem. Chairman and CEO Jeff Immelt had successfully led GE's transformation from a company with a very large financial services business into what leadership now calls a digital industrial company. The company had shifted gears to capitalize on a more connected world, where massive linked machines provided opportunities for new, sustained revenue streams, much the way the consumer-focused Internet of Things has begun to do in our personal lives. Today, GE's portfolio is focused on transportation, aviation and rail, healthcare, and energy. But just making the machines was insufficient. The company would need the best engineers, thousands of them, to fully realize Immelt's vision. One of the things that we have made a big bet on, explained Linda Boff, CMO, is the digitization of industry. We are now living in a time when simply selling the hardware, if you want to call a jet engine a piece of hardware, isn't enough. We need to be in the business of helping our customers gain productive outcomes. And to get to results, we have created a whole group, thousands of people, primarily new to the company, that have a deep software background. They are building the analytics and data that will enable our customers, whether it's a rail customer, or aviation, or a power plant, or a food and beverage corporation, to operate more effectively, more cheaply, or more productively by being able to anticipate where there are efficiencies. That might be being able to predict whether a jet engine needs to come off plane to be maintained, or where a wind farm needs to expand next. But before they could recruit the world's most talented engineers who could write the new software to run, monitor, and optimize the performance of the planes, trains, and wind farms, GE needed to get the word out about its new direction. Most software engineers didn't realize that GE had begun tackling complex, interesting challenges in technology. And those engineers were still flocking to jobs at the FANG companies, Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, and Google, as well as Apple and Microsoft. GE's marketing team was tasked with changing how engineers viewed the company. Boff started with a story. She said, "I believe, and our team believes, that idea-generated media is going to win out over programmatic, no matter the scale. We are buyers of impact, not frequency, partly because we can't spend enough to achieve frequency, and partly because I really do believe that ideas break through." So her team worked with GE's agency to create a story. Enter Owen. GE's protagonist, Owen, is a young graduate engineer who got a job with GE. The campaign, "What's the Matter with Owen?" captures how Owen's friends and family react to the news. In one spot, his parents, excited that he'll be working at GE, give him his grandfather's sledgehammer. Owen has to explain that he won't be building machines. He'll be writing the code that lets them talk with one another. In another, He shares news of his new job with a group of friends at a picnic table. Another friend announces that he's just taken a job at a fictional company called Zazzy's. Zazzy's offers an app where you put fruit hats on pictures of animals. His friends are big Zazzy fans and are thrilled and distracted by the second announcement. "I'll be helping turbines power cities," Owen protests. "I just put a turbine on a cat," his friend counters. "I can make hospitals run more efficiently," Owen offers. "It's not a competition," a friend chimes in. The ads delivered powerful results. Not only has Owen helped bring GE's brand into alignment with its new strategy and portfolio, but the campaign has increased job applications from software engineers tenfold. All thanks to a good story. When you storify advertising, you build an emotional connection between your brand and your audience. Owen is an underdog. We all imagine ourselves to be underdogs in the world. We identify with Owen when he is misunderstood by the world. We empathize with him. And by the end of the story, we want the world to understand that Owen is doing something important. He is creating software that makes big machines work far better than ever before. Now imagine if GE's ads said that directly. As the company's logo fills the TV screen, a voice intones, "We at GE create the software that connects the biggest and best machines of this world." Would audiences believe it? Or care? Doubtful. The Owen stories touch emotions bragging could never reach. That's power. Put a story within the story. Although the long-term future of broadcast advertising seems bleak, television and radio will remain marketing platforms for those who can afford them for some time to come. So if your strategy calls for disrupting dramas and comedies with ads, then do it as tactfully as possible by putting a story within the story. The mind jumps from story to story rather easily. For example, when viewers change channels in search of something good, or when the storylines cross-cut from central plot to subplot and back, audience engagement switches gears in a heartbeat. Story always feels welcome. So when your ad interrupts one story with another, the transition seems relatively smooth. But when you break deep, ongoing narrative involvement with a bragging, promising sales pitch, people hate it and ignore it. Consider the Super Bowl of commercials, the Super Bowl. This is the only day of the year when you'll hear that odd rebuke, "Quiet guys, it's the commercials." For a good reason. Brands and their agencies work all year to craft stories to fill most of these ad spots. Super Bowl fans argue about their favorite ads during the game and then publish best and worst lists online the next day. Have you ever noticed that old-school bragging promising ads tend to sit at the bottom of those lists, where storified ads rush to the top? Storified ads win off the field as well. When brands do their homework and truly come to understand their customers, they can craft stories that disrupt markets. In India, for example, marketers for the laundry detergent brand Ariel found deep disparity in the social norms for women and men in the household. 70% of men believed their wives should do the laundry. Even among children, 2 in 3 believed women were responsible for household chores. Today, women in India spend an average of 6 hours each day on housework, compared with men who spend less than 1. While this difference is itself unfair, it contributes to far broader inequality over time. Young women have nearly 2,000 fewer hours a year to study and prepare themselves for careers, leading to fewer and lower quality jobs and depressed wages. Women who are already in the workforce have less opportunity to advance because they must balance work and home life differently. The share of India's workforce comprising women fell from 31% to 24% between 2004 and 2011. Declining workforce participation has an adverse effect on the lives of women and the overall success of the Indian economy. As Harvard professor Rohini Pandey has explained, working and the control of assets it allows lowers rates of domestic violence and increases women's decision-making in the household. And an economy where all the most able citizens can enter the labor force is more efficient and grows faster. Indian women long for change. 85% of Indian women reported feeling like they have 2 jobs, one at work and one at home. 83% believed men should share the burden of household work. Marketers at Ariel and their agency BBDO India, Mumbai, understood this growing inequity and tapped into its social undercurrent, a growing sense of injustice, with their ad, Share the Load. Share the Load opens with the voice of its protagonist, a grandfather, narrating a letter that he writes to his daughter while she races around her home one evening. As he watches her juggle work, making tea for her husband and caring for her children, the grandfather becomes increasingly aware of how he passed these social stereotypes onto the daughter he raised. The story establishes a powerful negative floor by demonstrating how these norms have passed and continue to pass from generation to generation. Then the story turns from negative to positive when the daughter reads his note and discovers the grandfather's promise to share the burden of housework with his own wife and model the way for others. The shift in core value pair at stake here, from injustice to justice, connected with Indian women and ignited a conversation across the country. The Share the Load video was viewed more than 50 million times in 50 days. It generated more than 2 billion earned impressions online, the equivalent of $11 million in ad spending had that exposure been purchased. Talk shows devoted entire episodes to discussing how to balance the role of men and women in the household. Major clothing brands changed washing instructions on clothing tags, adding, may be washed by men or women, to traditional instructions. More than 2 million men visited the Ariel website, a laundry detergent site, and signed a pledge to hashtag share the load. Dating sites then added a new question to profiles. Will you share the load? This allowed people committed to finding a better balance to find one another. The social impact of the Storefied campaign must have delighted marketers at Ariel almost as much as this statistic. Sales of Ariel in India grew 75% year over year. Storefied commercials are far more engaging and effective than those that brag and promise. But in a world where consumers seek uninterrupted experiences, they will never be sufficient. With millions of consumers shifting to ad-free experiences every month, marketers must adjust their approach as well. The modern marketer must offer her customers unique, valued, and most important, fluid, nonstop experiences. In the same way that media companies built and maintained their audiences for decades, brands too must tell stories at a sustained pace to earn the respect of their customers and keep it. Chapter 10, Storefied Demand and Lead Generation. The average tenure of a chief marketing officer is just 44 months. To survive, CMOs need to demonstrate that they can deliver business results quickly. Many senior marketers arrive on the job to find they do not have time to invest in branding. Their company needs demand generation, B2C, or lead generation, B2B, to achieve quarterly results. Historically, in tight quarters, CMOs would ramp up the advertising budget to meet revenue goals or cut the budget to meet earnings. But with the rapid decline of advertising reach and efficacy, they need to turn somewhere new. To understand how brands can drive consumers to purchase and business buyers to engage with sales teams, we need to consider how people discover and consume information and entertainment today. Throughout the 20th century, people got their daily news from some combination of the morning paper, drive time radio, and evening television. Today, fewer than 27% of Americans can name even a single top-ranked newscaster or print journalist. Instead, online searches drive their active discovery, while social media provides for passive discovery. Active versus passive discovery. To gain immediate knowledge, people today turn to internet search engines like Google, Bing, Yandex, Russia, and Baidu, China, as well as voice searches like Apple's Siri, Microsoft's Cortana, Google's Hey Google on Android and Google Home, and Amazon's Alexa. More than 175 billion times per month, someone somewhere launches one of these goal-driven, active discoveries. Over the same 4 weeks, 30 billion people with no specific goal follow curiosity where it leads to Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, Snapchat, or Pinterest, and by pure coincidence, learn something interesting, something of value. These chance revelations often feel like a gift from beyond, so people share their passive discoveries with friends and family, compounding these serendipities from 30 to 90 billion. These tens of billions of discoveries offer an unprecedented marketing opportunity if you provide the information or entertainment your customers seek. Analysts who study online consumer behavior report that 85% of the time when people click away from a search page, they click not on a tab or an ad, but on a link to something else. When they click away from social media, that number jumps to 90%. This means that like blank billboards along a highway, search and social discoveries offer CMOs new ways to reach customers and build ongoing relationships. But if marketers fill this space with ads alone, they will miss the vast majority of their addressable market. The solution, therefore, is to reach customers through sustained content creation rather than the hit and miss of traditional advertising. What's more, when someone arrives on your website, what's the first thing he sees? Your products? Your logo? Your slogan? A list of claims? Really? Never underestimate the power of first impressions. When your customer first arrives, consider giving him a gift. Content marketing. Content marketing is not new. In 1895, John Deere launched The Furrow, a magazine that helped farmers work more skillfully and profitably. The Furrow still exists and reaches 1.5 million readers in more than 40 countries. Explicitly, it provides the innovative techniques farmers need. Implicitly, it builds awareness of John Deere farm machinery. In 1900, a French manufacturer launched a guide to fine restaurants, hotels, and sightseeing destinations. The publication executed its mission with such consistent excellence that it became the journal of record in that space. Today, one of the highest honors awarded any restaurateur is a Michelin star. Not bad for a tire company. As The Furrow and the Michelin Guide demonstrate, the strategy of content marketing has been, since its inception, simplicity itself. First, give them a gift. Before the sales pitches begin, before claims and guarantees assault the buyer, put a handout and in it, place a gift of meaningful emotional experience. Welcome the client with an insight she's never had before, wrapped in a feeling she's never quite felt that way before. In short, tell her a story. If a visitor's first impression of your brand is a captivating video or a fascinating piece of writing that tells a story rooted in nature, science, history, or some other new and interesting subject matter, this surprise gift opens the door to your store. Now she's inside, looking around, and your visitor moves from anonymous consumer to prospect. Let your sales team take her to the next step from prospect to customer. In the past, content marketing projects such as The Furrow and Michelin Guide were a costly way to supplement advertising. Brands had to identify prospective audiences, research and author up-to-date subject matter every week or month, print that content, package it, and pay distribution fees. Today, no. Brands like Colgate with their Oral Care Center or IBM with SecurityIntelligence.com provide always-on experiences that improve the lives of their prospective customers. The globally connected world makes publishing and distribution tasks relatively simple and their costs nominal when compared with the costs of printing, marketing, and delivery of traditional media. Moreover, when marketers engineer content for easy discovery in search and social, earned reach hits unprecedented scale. Skillful execution of sustained storified content marketing minimizes audience building costs and thus drives far greater ROI than interrupt advertising. As a result, brand marketers who have never played the content marketing game now rush onto the field. For CMOs new to the sport, however, understanding the options and ascertaining which work best for a particular business can be rather confusing. To address this problem and guide marketers through the steps they must take to move from ad-centric to story-centric marketing, we have created a framework called the Marketing Continuum. The Marketing Continuum. This continuum spans the five developmental stages of companies incorporating content marketing into their strategies. Are you a bystander, creating only product-focused content, or a leader working to storify your marketing and sales? Using this framework, you can diagnose where your organization sits today and guide your step-by-step transformation from ad-centric to story-centric. The graphic can be seen in the PDF. The bystander. Bystanders are addicted to the past. These companies get a high from continually applauding themselves, bragging about their products, and promising the moon. Like all addicts, they can't see that other people do not share in their self-indulgence. So the CMO of a bystander company must, like a therapist, transform the thinking of the executive, marketing, and sales teams, and then lead them to focus on the needs and desires of their customers, not themselves. The novice. Novice brands take the first step and publish customer-centric content. But compared with their more evolved competitors, novices remain novices because they're strung out on the age-old strategies of advertising campaigns. They publish sporadically in short timeframes, but then, sensing the weakness of this tactic, spend most of their marketing dollar to buy audience from the media outlets they hire to create and publish their content. For example, sometimes novices purchase space from media companies to post one-off info ads designed to help prospective customers master a skill that is related to their offering. The content helps the customer solve a problem while demonstrating that the brand can be a helpful advisor. Vanguard offers a retirement planning column and calculator to educate prospective customers about why they should contribute to their IRA accounts at the start of the tax year instead of at the end. Canon helps camera owners find innovative ways to exercise their craft by sponsoring interviews with famous photographers about inspiration. At the New York Times, in fact, you can buy a native ad package with an internal team called T-Brand Studios that will help you develop your info ad and a promotional scheme to drive New York Times subscribers to it. The graphic can be seen in the PDF. Social platforms saw this opportunity coming years ago. When the various social media first launched, they sold ad space for revenue, but let companies freely publish content to anyone they wished. For a while, these brands enjoyed vast social reach as their material was consumed, commented on, and passed along to friends. Before long, however, social platforms changed their algorithms and eliminated this organic audience. All short-term campaign-based solutions, by definition, lack a regular publishing rhythm, so there's no incentive for the consumer to return. For that reason alone, campaign-driven content strategies will not drive meaningful results. They offer the novice easy ways to test the waters, but no more than that. The expert. Experts do not rely on one-off or campaign-based habits. Instead, they give their customers sustained, dependable experiences that educate, inspire, and entertain over time. The Oral Care Center, for example, is Colgate's gift to its customers. In this section of Colgate.com, current and prospective customers find helpful information on how to keep their teeth and gums healthy, as well as tips for dealing with more difficult dental procedures like extractions and implants. People seeking solutions to dental problems click on Colgate far more than the traditional medical sites of WebMD and the Mayo Clinic. How did Colgate.com become the most trusted source for dental info? First, the Oral Care Center team finds the topics customers search most and then creates content to match. They ensure each article is optimized to rank well against search queries. By search optimizing content, Colgate.com creates an experience that ends the search. Customers find what they need. Every month, Colgate.com broadens its audience and builds relationships that last. Second, Colgate does not use the Oral Care Center to promote the benefits of Colgate products. Brands lose credibility when they shift the focus of their content from helping the consumer back to the bragging and promising of yesteryear. Instead, the Oral Care Center content positions Colgate as a leader in oral health and delivers clear benefits to prospective customers. This shift from creating content about the brand to creating content that the customer actually seeks makes Colgate a content marketing expert. The leader. Companies evolve into content marketing leaders when they move from sustained content creation to sustained storytelling. 4 years ago, IBM unified its security products and services inside one division, IBM Security. Today, IBM Security employs 8,000 security professionals, adding 1,900 since 2015. IBM's $2 billion security business grew by double digits, twice the rate of the market, in 2016. Caleb Barlow, VP IBM Security, explained their unique marketing challenge. What we have is a very technical issue, a very complex issue, and in some cases a very scary issue that we need to be able to describe to people in order to get them to act. We're not talking about products like a collaboration system that you log into and use all day, every day. We're talking about products that hopefully you never see as an end user, and in some cases, hopefully you never need to use. But boy, you'd better make sure they're there when you need them. So storytelling becomes extraordinarily important. Leaders at IBM Security realized that chief information security officers and the general public have two very different information needs. The popular media, when we are talking about a cyber breach, Barlow said, focuses on who done it and why they did it. If you are the next potential target, you care about how it occurred, not why, not who done it, but how. Because if we focus on the how, then we actually have the opportunity to solve the problem. IBM Security realized that the company could develop an audience of CISOs, CEOs, and board members concerned with security by creating a journal of record focused on the how in the IT space. The resulting property, IBM's award-winning securityintelligence.com, breaks news on hacks, malware, data theft, and software vulnerabilities that can put enterprises at risk, and analyzes how others can avoid the same attacks. Hundreds of thousands of CISOs, CIOs, and CTOs visit and return to that property each month and are grateful to IBM for the help. How is this different from advertising? Why would consumers trust this information from IBM but distrust advertising from brands? Caleb Barlow knows that a company loses credibility when it brags about itself or makes promises about its products. So the vast majority of the content on securityintelligence.com does not mention IBM, its products, or its solutions. Instead, IBM simply provides the information that IT professionals need to do their job. As a result, some believe IBM's credibility on IT security ranks higher than any traditional news source. When IBM uncovered a hacking threat to petrochemical plants, it aired those threats on securityintelligence.com. The world listened. The graphic can be seen in the PDF. After the article appeared on its site, traditional news organizations like the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, the Associated Press, and Thomson Reuters all relayed the story around the world, linking to IBM security intelligence. If you're buying a security product, it's kind of like buying a child seat for your kid. You're not interested in second best, Barlow explained. It's practical, but it's also emotional. When C-suite executives decide it's time to make new investments to keep their company safe, their first call goes to IBM Security, because the brand became their trusted advisor through the stories shared on securityintelligence.com. This is the secret all content marketing leaders know very well. Driving demand with story. In Chapter 8, we learned that stories told for the purpose of branding must observe one important rule. The core value of the story must align with the core value of the brand. The setting for these stories, such as surfing the big wave, could be unrelated to the product being sold, such as an energy drink, so long as the core value aligns with the brand promise. In Red Bull's case, both take you from fatigued to energized. But until Red Bull bet big on story-centric marketing, there was no link between their brand and the extreme sports they now cover each day. When we apply story form to demand or lead generation marketing, however, we apply the same form differently. In demand or lead generation stories, the protagonist will typically be a customer or prospective customer. The inciting incident will occur, at least in part, because the protagonist is not using the product or service your company offers. This will take the customer to the negative. When an object of desire forms in the protagonist's mind, your offering is one that will help her achieve that goal. Demand or lead gen stories will typically end on the positive, with the protagonist achieving her object of desire, in part with the help of an offering like yours. In a handful of cases, however, like Adobe's famous Click Baby Click advertisement, the story ends to the negative, with implied disaster for the protagonist. Click Baby Click opens in the headquarters of a sleepy encyclopedia company. The inciting incident is a spike in web traffic and orders, driving sales through the roof. News climbs quickly to the CEO, who proclaims, "We're back," and then marshals the resources of his suppliers around the world to quickly ramp up production. Commodity markets for wood pulp skyrocket, responding to sudden demand for more paper. But the segment ends with the revelation that the driver for this demand wasn't a rebounding marketplace, hungry for encyclopedias. It was a single small child who liked pushing the buy button on an iPad. As the scene fades to black, the audience knows the featured company and CEO protagonist face certain economic disaster. But then after the story ends, Adobe takes us to the positive with the message to the audience. Do you know what your marketing is doing? We can help. In effect, this final reveal shows that your fate doesn't have to be that of the CEO, if you are smart enough to buy the Adobe Marketing Cloud to analyze your data. To use a story that ends on the negative effectively, marketers turn to comedy, as does Adobe. In comedy, the cardinal rule is that nobody actually gets hurt. If you do not employ comedy, you risk creating negative feelings about your brand, like Nationwide did when they ruined the Super Bowl for millions with their infamous commercial, Boy, in 2014. The spot featured an empathetic young protagonist that the brand killed in a bathtub. The day after the spot aired, USA Today covered how the audience reacted on Twitter to this misapplication of story form. The Nationwide example illustrates that story form, applied improperly, can do damage to your company just as effectively as story well told and well applied can do good. Create? License? Curate? When a CMO launches a sustained content marketing regime, where will she get her stories? Will she create originals, license them from other sources, or simply curate stories others created? The graphic can be seen in the PDF. Original, sustainable, story-driven content creation is not easy. Marketers with this ambition must develop a strategy, license a content marketing platform, CMP, recruit creatives, and implement a process for managing, reviewing, and improving that content every day. A regular publishing cadence of well-told stories requires time, money, and resources. For that reason, some marketers cut corners and try to license or curate instead. Licensing content means that they pay a fee to media companies for the rights to pre-written stories or pre-produced videos. Curation eliminates fees by simply citing media stories and sending audiences to the original source. Although content licensing and curating are cheap and fast, both are inherently flawed. If you use either means, how can you differentiate yourself from your competitors? What's to stop your competition from emulating you, using the same content from the same sources? And most important, if you curate or license, how do you demonstrate thought leadership and expertise the way IBM Security does? Jeannie Mullen is global CMO of Mercer, a firm that provides advice and technology-driven solutions to help companies meet the health, wealth, and career needs of a changing workforce. Mullen taps Mercer's health, wealth, and career thought leaders to craft stories that drive their marketing. In a recent interview, Mullen explained, "Technology is radically reshaping how we work and how we interact with our colleagues. With over 21,000 employees in offices in 140 countries, we're on the front lines with our clients, studying that change and defining how companies adapt to capitalize on it. We are the experts. We have to be. That's our business. There is nowhere else to get this information, and our clients must have it to compete and succeed." In their recently launched effort, Mercer Digital, Mullen and her team share what they discover about the changing marketplace. For example, she explains, "Today there's intense competition for talent. Millennials are looking for different things from a job than their older counterparts. Millennials know how quickly the world is changing, so they care more about ongoing education and new skills development than Gen Xers did when they entered the workforce. Companies can't just present traditional benefits packages to this generation. They need to show them how they will prepare them for career mobility in the future. Alternatively, in fields with increasing automation, we're now helping companies prepare their workforce for cobots or collaborative robots. How do you orient someone to work hand in hand with a machine? What can they expect? How do they interact? What are the safety requirements? What additional training is required? how can the machines be designed for better human interaction? By gathering this insight from Mercer experts around the globe and sharing it on Mercer Digital, Mullen uses original content to demonstrate the firm's unique expertise while simultaneously creating value for customers.